Welcome to the Latter-day Saint Home Educators Podcast, a source of inspiration, strength, and support on your homeschooling journey. We are so glad you've joined us.
Welcome to another episode of Homeschool Conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Salter, and with me, I have Katie Teakin. Katie, would you introduce yourself for everybody?
Sure, yeah. Hi, I'm Katie Teakin. I grew up homeschooled. I've been an enthusiast of personal growth for about a decade now, and probably more, honestly, growing up homeschooled. It kind of helped that, I think. And more particularly focused on positive psychology and psychological models for the last 5 years or so. I took my first coaching training in 2014 and started working with moms on mindset and being able to handle all the craziness that is motherhood, and particularly the emotional blocks and things that get in our way of really showing up for our kids and our families and living lives that feel good for us.
Awesome. We are so excited to have you here. As I kind of am looking ahead to the new year, past the holidays and everything, it always seems like we kind of hit a wall in like February, March time. You know, it's post holidays, most places in the US, it's cold and snowy and sometimes really gloomy. The excitement of the holidays is over. And like with our new semester in January, we kind of get a little lift from that. And then it just seems like everything comes crashing down. And I know it's not just me. I've talked to a ton of moms who have the same phenomenon. We hate homeschooling. We don't like our kids don't like us, they don't like each other. And we just kind of like gut it through until spring. And so I wanted to talk with you about like, what is causing this kind of burnout? And, you know, kind of talk about how do we address it? How do we deal with it? So I am super excited to talk with you and just like kind of unpack this issue of, you know, why is it that we don't like anybody in February?
Yeah, no, this is such a great topic. It's one of my personal like soapbox topics is burnout. I like to call myself a burnout expert for all the wrong reasons, right?
I'm an expert at being burned out. How's that?
Yes. Been there, done that. It's real and it's so hard. And it's really interesting too, that psychology and research has really only just started to look at burnout as a thing and acknowledge it as something that we need to address and maybe figure out how to deal with. And as a personal frustration, they pretty much only classify it as a workplace thing right now. They don't acknowledge it in any other sense. And I'm like, well, homeschool moms, you know, that's definitely a full-time job. Yeah, and I exactly. find that a lot of the research and the things that they're finding totally apply to what we're talking about. And so one of the helpful things that they've been able to figure out in the last few years is what they call the three characteristics of burnout. tell me if this sounds familiar. First is exhaustion. Second is emotional detachment. And third is a sense of ineffectiveness.
Yeah, been there, done that, got the t-shirt.
Yes, definitely sounds familiar, right? We've been there. And I like to kind of describe it as really just a sense of hopelessness. Like you get in there and you're like, we're not happy, this isn't working. You know, something is wrong and I don't know how to fix it and I don't feel like I can fix it. And and everything's just gonna stay this way. And it's that kind of just almost apathetic hopelessness that's just like, oh, I'm shut down. I don't want to deal with another day. I don't want to get up and make dinner. I kind of think of it as the, you know, cold cereal for breakfast, lunch, and dinner sort of day, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's where we're at. And it's really important to recognize those three different phases, because when it comes to preventing or dealing with or moving through burnout, you really need to address all three of those aspects: the exhaustion, the emotional detachment, and the sense of ineffectiveness.
Yeah. So I guess let's start with exhaustion. I don't even know how to tell people how to prevent this, right? Because we're juggling 12 billion plates and hoping things don't crash down. But yeah. What are your best tips for preventing that?
So when it comes to preventing the exhaustion, I think the biggest factor, I mean, yes, you know, we're up with babies or we're doing tons of things. We've got the housework, we're juggling. But I think the biggest factor is the expectations and managing our expectations and managing how we let other people's expectations affect us. Because that's really the driver when we start to overwork ourselves, when we start to overcommit to things, it's the expectations that are pushing us to that.
Right. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Like, we don't have to be perfect, but we feel like we need to be.
Exactly. There's that expectation there, whether we expect it of ourselves or other people expect it of us.
Right.
And so really, I think the exhaustion is most often the final result. It's like the result of all the other things that we're kind of doing a little wrong.
Right.
Ends up with the exhaustion. But what's really key there is obviously, and self-care. I kind of hate that term personally. I don't like using it, but it's an easy way to explain what I'm talking about. Right. But really just being able to take care of ourselves and make sure our own needs are being met. And again, that feeds into a whole other skill set as well. It takes boundaries. It takes, you know, good, healthy relationships. It takes managing those expectations to be able to create the space and the time, the opportunity for us to really meet our own needs and even recognize our own needs. That's a whole nother,
right.
It's a whole nother conversation too.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, I found for myself that part of that exhaustion is mental. And like, I have to sometimes turn off the news or log out of Facebook or, you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
Because there's so many things I just can't tackle. I can't deal with riots somewhere, you know? So I just have to, like, I find myself getting really anxious and saying, okay, I need to disconnect.
Yeah.
When I
talk about self-care with moms, I really like to talk about four different areas of spiritual, social, emotional, and physical. And you need to make sure you're addressing all of those different areas. And oftentimes we get a little confused and we can sometimes get frustrated going, well, I'm sleeping and I'm doing this and I'm eating well and I'm exercising, so I should feel fine. And we get a little frustrated. You know, I'm doing my care, but we're ignoring the mental or the emotional or the social needs that we have. And so when looking at your own self-care, you really need to do an inventory of those four different areas and be like, okay, what area am I missing? What area is being dropped right now? And it is hard. I'm not going to argue with you there. It is hard to make sure you're constantly fitting in all of those. But it is also okay that sometimes you need more of one than the others. And that's fine to focus on that for a while and then rotate to the next one, if that makes sense.
Right, right. So just kind of what you need in the moment.
Yes.
Yeah. And I remember joking with friends that we set up play dates with that we needed the play date more than the kids did.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So really when it comes to that physical exhaustion, I'd say that that's the core symptom that dealing with everything else that we're going to talk about will help you resolve that, and making sure you're doing that self-care stuff and remembering to make that space for yourself, which I think the skills that we will continue to talk about will clarify how you can do that.
Right, right. That makes perfect sense. And I think a lot of times we're not self-aware. We're hyper aware of what's going on with our kids, but
yes.
We're not so tuned into ourselves. And so I think we find ourselves, we catch it pretty late sometimes.
Like, yes.
You know, we don't see the warning signs. So maybe talk about what some of the warning signs are, you know, to help us catch it a little earlier.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the real warning signs you want to look out for with burnout is one of the hallmarks of it is escapist daydreaming. When you catch yourself going, wouldn't it be great if I could just escape to Tahiti and leave the kids with my husband and just like, or what if I could just put my kids back in school? How much easier would life be if that was an option, right? Or if I could just really do that or whatever that is. And of course, you know we don't really want to do that, but it's just like, it's nice to just envision for a while, right?
Right.
And escape to it, because right now is just so hard. So that's one of the biggest, most obvious ones. And I want to point out real quick, paying attention to what exactly you are kind of fantasizing about escaping from can be a really good diagnostic tool to tell you where the problem is. Okay. So if you wish you could escape from homeschooling, then maybe you need to change the curriculum you're using or mix up your plans or something there. And, you know, that's what you need to address. If you're daydreaming about housework, maybe that needs to be addressed, you know? So using that to kind of tell you where things are off can be really, really helpful.
Yeah. That's really helpful. I like that.
Yeah. Another good warning sign to keep in mind is what I call the more emotional, like relational ones, which would be wishing you could tell someone off, right? Of like going off in your head. If you're on the edge of burnout and you're sitting there going, man, I wish I could just tell my husband to go, you know, or the kids, or tell this other person or whatever it is. What I can best term as resentfully abandoning them to their fate, right? Of going, fine, if you guys won't even listen, if you want to, you just do whatever you want. I don't even care anymore, right? Like that sort of resentful, I can't take this anymore. That's the signs of the emotional withdrawal, which is the second sign of burnout, which is that emotional detachment of like, I can't even care about people anymore. Like it's right. just too much.
Right.
I'm empty.
Yeah, I would love to say I've never experienced that, but
I know, right?
You're a liar.
Yeah. Another one to keep in mind is if looking at your schedule or your commitments is overwhelming, you know, you want to just sit down and cry. Like right. you look at your week and you go, no, like, no, that's another one that's going to be like, okay, you're headed towards burnout.
Right.
To do something about it. You can't just, and that's really the core. When I talk about burnout is that state of kind of hopelessness, of feeling right. stuck, feeling trapped right. and remembering that you do have options is a huge key to it.
Right.
I want to talk about that more later, but when you're looking at that calendar and you feel like there's no other options, remembering, you know what? There really are options. I really am in control of my life. I have agency, you know, this
right. Right.
Remembering all things can be super key. And the last one that you can fall into, the sign that you're either headed towards burnout or you're deep in it, is emotionally numbing, right? And just going like, I can't even care. Like I've definitely reached a place where there've been times where it's like my kids are in the other room, like screaming and fighting. And I'm like, I can't even care enough to go worry about that right now.
Right.
I'm done. The, right. the emotional reserves are not there for me to be able to address that right now. Mm-hmm. And so the numbing, apathy, emptiness, and really just emotional isolation. If you can't care about other people, you can't emotionally engage with people, you can't even, you're just kind of hollow.
Right.
It's never a good sign.
Yeah.
So those would be the warning signs that you need to start focusing on, okay, moving forward and working on the skill sets that
right.
I really love into.
Yeah, that's some very helpful, because I'm like replaying the movie of my life in my mind and I'm like, oh yeah, I see here, I see, you know, I'm just seeing it. Whereas before without calling that out, I maybe wasn't aware that that was a problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's really helpful. Thank you for that kind of checklist.
Good. So where do you want to go next?
let's talk about the third kind of aspect.
Okay.
And then we'll kind of talk about like working through it, you know, but let's talk about the third.
So the third aspect, so we talked about the physical exhaustion, and we talked about that sort of emotional detachment and that hollowness. The last one is the sense of inefficacy, or like,
right,
can't do anything. You can't change anything. Nothing you do works. Nothing's effective. You're useless. All of those sorts of feelings.
Right.
Again, going back to the hopelessness, it's hard to be in a hard situation, right? Like it's hard to be somewhere you don't want to be. Like, my kids are fighting all day. We hate everything. It's gloomy outside. We're miserable. Like, everything's miserable. But what makes it worse is when you feel like there's nothing you can do about it, and
right,
you feel stuck there.
Right.
Really, that is the hardest part. And one thing that I find is that we tend to be in two places on our way out of burnout. Like when we're kind of waking up and going, oh, I am totally in burnout. We're either in the I still don't care phase, or the I care again and I'm so overwhelmed I can't function. Like,
right.
Because sometimes you'll kind of like wake up the next morning and be like, my life is kind of a disaster because I've been shut down for who knows how long. Right.
Right.
And you kind of wake up and you're like, okay, I want to do something about this. You know, you kind of have that hope again, a little bit of maybe I can do something about this, or I wish I could get out of this. But then you start to get the emotional bombardment of how could I let this happen? Look at my kids. I'm such a terrible
right.
mom. And we start that blame and guilt. And guilt and shame factor of just getting stuck in, how could I let this happen? This is terrible. Look at all these things that I've done.
Right. Right.
So if you're still in the, I still don't care phase, I'm going to talk in a second about ultimate goals, and that'll help you start caring again. If you're in the, I care again, but I'm now an emotional basket case because of where I'm at.
Right, right.
The first thing you need to do there is forgive yourself. And that is a whole skill set just by itself, of being
right.
able to go, it's okay that I'm here and I'm ready to change, and we're all going to learn and grow from this together.
Yeah, I like thinking of that as grace. You know, the Savior offers us so much grace. We don't often think of applying that to ourselves, but when you offer yourself the grace to say, okay, we are here, we don't have to stay here, let's, you know, evaluate how we can move on. That is, you know, that, yeah, we can forgive ourselves and recognize and just move on, but it's having grace for ourselves. You know, because we would never hold anybody else to the high standard we hold ourselves to.
Exactly. And that really goes back again to expectations. And
right.
remembering
yeah.
that, you know, Christ doesn't have those expectations of you. Like
right.
Christ knows your limits and knows what you're capable of and knows what you're not capable of, and only expects from you what will make you happy.
Right. Yeah.
So I totally agree with that. So that's really the first step. Those are the two first steps, depending on where you're at in the burnout process, either starting to care again or forgiving yourself. And so I'm going to talk a little bit on this ultimate goal concept. So I'm going to talk about three different skill sets that help you address the three different areas of burnout. So the exhaustion, the detachment, and the ineffectiveness. So I'm going to talk first about the sense of ineffectiveness. And because, again, burnout is hopelessness, so we got to bring the hope back. And so these are actually skills that positive psychologists have developed around hope. Like, how do you become a more hopeful person? And so I'm going to talk about three of those, which are pathways thinking, a growth mindset, and your ultimate goal. So I'm going to start actually with the ultimate goal, because that's how you can come out. If you're still in the, I can't really care right now phase. This is how you kind of come back to caring again, because the reason that we reach that state of emptiness and not caring is because to care would be too painful.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're so overwhelmed, we're so frustrated with where we're at, we're so hurt that our life hasn't been as perfect, hurt that we've ended up here, hurt that we weren't good enough to, you know, homeschool our kids perfectly so that they loved every second and they cooperated perfectly all the time, you know, like all right. of those yeah. different expectations and guilts and every, all of it, all those emotions become so overwhelming that we just shut down. We don't want to deal with them. We shut them out. And so that self-protection is why we end up empty.
Right.
Now, one of the biggest things we end up hiding from is, you know, all of those are wrapped up in the idea that we can't reach that goal that we care about so much, which, you know, as homeschool moms is, you know, the ideal lifestyle, that raising our kids, you know, that love of learning, that environment of hope and light, or, you know, whatever that is for you, that goal, that vision you have in your head. And when we feel like we have failed or we can't get there, those emotions come up, we shut down.
Right.
So remembering our ultimate goal and thinking about what we really do want can be hard and painful when we feel like we can't get there. But remembering that there are multiple ways to that goal is the key. Because oftentimes we'll sit there and go, we'll get attached to processes instead of just the outcome, because we want this outcome. Mm-hmm. But when we get too attached to the way of getting there, that's when we end up really, really in trouble. So say, you know, beginning of, you know, you're starting a new January school year and this, you found this new curriculum that you're just so excited about. Oh, this is going to be great. This is going to get us to this goal that we want, this lifestyle, everything is going to be perfect and rosy and wonderful. And this curriculum is what's going to get us there. And we get so attached to that and we do it for a few weeks, a month, and everything starts to fall back apart to the kind of the way it was before, or, you know, things aren't working the way we wanted. And we go, that ultimate goal, that perfect lifestyle that I was looking for is now impossible. Mm-hmm. I failed. It's unreachable. And so not only do we have to deal with the disappointment of that curriculum not working out, but we're really dealing with the disappointment of never having that lifestyle that we dream so hard about. Does right. that make sense?
Yeah. And, you know, I'm a pretty stubborn person. So if something's not working, I tend to push harder.
Yeah.
But I'm just not doing it enough.
Yes.
Right. Instead
exactly.
of going, wait a minute, maybe this isn't, you know, and I like the thinking of, okay, is there another way to go about this?
Exactly. So that leads us into our second skill set. The first one, that ultimate goal and remembering that, is that remember that that curriculum, that path you had in mind, wasn't really what you wanted. Remember that what you wanted was this outcome, was that ultimate goal, was right. the end of the journey. So remembering that, that's your ultimate goal skill. Your next skill is what's called pathways thinking, which is what you were just talking about, of being able to see different ways to get there, of being able to go, oh, you know, this could work, or this could work, or we could try this, or we could adapt. And just that adaptable thinking, that flexible thinking, because one of the fastest ways to get to burnout is to be rigid in the face of failure or disappointment.
Mm-hmm.
That is going to burn you out faster than anything, because there's a body of research called about the concept of learned helplessness.
Mm-hmm.
And they did various experiments with animals, but basically if an animal, it's kind of like, if you've ever heard of the baby elephants who are tied to a stake and that they can't pull their foot, you know, their foot's tied to the stake and they pull and they pull and they pull, they can't pull the stake out. But once they grow up to full size, they could easily pull out the stake, but they don't try anymore.
They don't try because they don't think they can.
They don't think they can. Exactly.
Right.
They've learned helplessness, and they've done that in many areas with different animals and people. People learn helplessness. If you can box someone in long enough, then we learn that we can't help ourselves. So
right.
pathways thinking is the opposite of that. It's like, no matter how many doors close, there's always going to be another way to go about this. And it's, like I said, it takes a lot of hope, and it's a skill. You just got to
right.
practice, and you got to keep going at it. And you're going to not always be perfect at it, but you got to keep that in the front of your brain of, we're going to keep trying. and reconnecting right. with that ultimate goal, really. Right. You know, this outcome is the thing that we're attached to.
Right. Yeah, I like that.
So the third skill on these hope skills, the third one that I wanted to touch on was what's called a growth mindset. So there's a body of work by Carol Dweck, and she wrote a book called Mindset, and it talks about a fixed mindset versus a growth mindset. It's very fascinating. If you find yourself to be a bit of a perfectionist, definitely go check out this book. It's a great way to start loosening all of those perceptions that we tend to have. So a growth mindset means it's okay to learn. It's okay to fail. It's okay to not do it perfectly the right time. And again, going back to hope, it is still possible to be good at something, even if you aren't good at it now. Which I think a lot of times we go, well, of course, that's obvious. Of course we can do that. You know, we all know we can learn and grow theoretically, but we don't act that way. And we beat ourselves up a lot when we're like, it's so easy for them and they're so good, naturally good at it. And I'll just never be as good at them because they're just gifted and, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah. And we don't try.
Yes, exactly. And the biggest thing about a growth mindset is the fear of trying.
Right.
The fear of putting in effort is like, you end up stuck in a fixed mindset and believing I will always be this way. Because you're afraid to try, because if you try and fail, that means you'll never be able to be good at it.
Right.
It's that like once and done, can't grow sort of attitude is the fixed mindset. We don't want that. That's not helpful because we know this takes iteration. We know we need to be able to grow. So you really need that growth mindset and that piece of feeling okay with trying, okay with putting in effort, okay with failing.
Right.
So I definitely recommend that book if you know that this is a thing for you.
Yeah, I love that. And, you know, I also think we need to remember that things take time. Like yes. We're measuring our kids' success and learning based on if they remember something that I taught them yesterday, whereas, you know, it's the building blocks and it's, you know, it takes time and repetition. And I mean, how many times does it say in the scriptures, remember? You know, because we don't, even as adults, you know, I'm like, I've read the Book of Mormon, I don't know how many times, and yet I go through it and I'm like, oh, I missed that, you know, the first 50 times I read it. So our expectations for our kids are sometimes way off too. And that how we measure effectiveness maybe is really not that effective.
Though that need for instant results, that need for instant confirmation. And that's another aspect, I think, of the ultimate goal idea is like understanding that that's a process to get there. That right. just because we don't have that right now, right away, doesn't mean that it's not an option. Doesn't mean that it's never going to happen. It just means that we're still in that process and it needs to be that little bit at a time.
And I think sometimes we forget that, you know, a pretty solid percentage of what they do is going to be wrong by the time they're an adult. You know, I mean, science is changing so rapidly and we really need to teach them how to learn and to be excited about that. And we don't need to necessarily worry about all these little details.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think it's something astounding, like 70% of what we learn in high school is completely wrong or useless. You know, by the time we're an adult, and the world is changing so fast now, and it will change even more quickly for our kids. So, you know, part of our end goal needs to be like, maybe not memorizing the times tables, but maybe knowing where to go when you can't remember something. Or,
and that's a great example, going back to the expectations. And that kind of leads into my next point of being able to manage your expectations. And there's this process that I call pursuing the what if, which is like, we tend to panic about, you know, these things that happen in our life when we're like, oh no, my kid doesn't know his times tables. He's going to ruin the rest of his life is doomed, you know, like something like that. And we go to these extremes when we're like, okay, stop, pursue the what if. Actually think about this for a second. What will happen if he doesn't know his times tables? He can Google it. or he can pull up the thing on his phone, or he can
like calculator.
Yes, the calculator on the phone, right? Like there's so many other options. And so sometimes we get like carried away in all these what ifs when we're like, no, 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 actually stop and think about it.
Right.
There are other options. And again, it's the same as like pathways thinking, looking at those other possible outcomes. So those expectations, I like to talk about in terms of boundaries every time, because that's the other thing. If we want to avoid burnout, it takes the boundaries.
Right.
So boundaries are being able to draw a line of what's okay, what's not okay, what I'm going to do, what I'm not going to do. And I like to think of them in terms of like a battle plan, right? Of like a plan of action. This is what's going to happen. And so if you are overcommitting yourself, if you're getting carried away with your own expectations or other people's expectations, setting limits, setting boundaries is really the answer there. And one of the most important things I like to remember about boundaries is that you cannot set a boundary on someone else. You can only set boundaries. And a boundary is what I will do if. So if someone, you know, a boundary could be, if someone asks me to work on another project this month that I know is full of projects already, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to, you know, politely say no or whatever. And coming up with as specific as you need. If you need to write down a specific sentence that you feel good about, because you're always like, I don't know how to say no in a nice way. And you're like,
yeah, exactly.
Yes. If you know you're one of those people who gets really anxious in those situations, memorize something. It's okay. Like do what you have to do to empower yourself, to prepare yourself so that when that time comes, you can set that boundary. Because
yeah, I like that idea of thinking ahead, because so often the problem with boundaries is we're surprised by a request or, you know, it kind of comes out of the blue for us. And we're like, I don't have any reason not to that I can think of like the split seconds or, you know, so I like thinking ahead of time, like, okay, here's what I can manage. And here's how I say no, if it's outside of that limit.
Exactly. And being able to have that headspace. And another option too, is maybe that thing that you memorize instead of like just being memorizing the no, is maybe memorizing when someone asks, I say, I will have to check my schedule and get back to you. Thank you for asking.
Yeah.
You know, like maybe that's what you say or whatever. But I like to point out boundaries as being, boundaries allow you to do less and to do it your way.
Right.
So it allows you to do less by being able to say no and knowing your limits and holding those, but it also allows you to do it your way in terms of those expectations, in terms of being able to set boundaries around, you know, other people's expectations. And boundaries, we need to remember that there are physical boundaries, social boundaries, emotional boundaries. There's lots of different kinds of boundaries, and in different relationships and situations, we need different kinds. So maybe a physical boundary is, okay, kids, I'm sorry, I'm putting a lock on this cabinet because I cannot handle you guys pulling everything out every single day, blah, blah, you know, like maybe that's a physical boundary we need to put in place. Or a social boundary might be, maybe hanging out, maybe one source of burnout for you is comparison. And you start to compare yourself, your expectations go out up the roof, and you do all these crazy things. And that's a huge trigger for you, is comparison or feeling criticized. And maybe there's a group of moms, like every day, you know, every week you take your kids to a class or whatever, and you sit with this group of moms and you feel a lot of the criticism and the comparison or whatever in this group. So maybe the social boundary is, okay, I need to drop my kids off and go sit in the opposite corner. Or maybe I need to drop my kids off and go sit in the car and set that kind of boundary of, I can't engage with this right now. I'll be polite and I can still, you know, say hi, but I can also say, sorry, I have a project I really need to work on. I'm going to have to go sit in my car and do that right now. Or, you know, and bring the project. So you're not just lying, right? But like, but holding those boundaries, making that plan in advance to get whatever kind of social space you may need or those social boundaries.
Right.
And then the emotional boundaries are, I think, the hardest ones to really master. But it's really learning to choose very carefully whose opinions and emotions matter to you and who you can accommodate, can and will accommodate and won't.
Right.
So maybe your husband, you can choose, I care what my husband thinks about my homeschooling and I will discuss it with him and work with him and hash this out until we can both feel good about that. But my mother-in-law, I need to not, like, I cannot emotionally invest in what she thinks about my homeschooling.
Right.
And I need to create an emotional boundary there. And maybe that looks like not allowing the topic to come up, coming up with that, again, that plan of when, you know, when she starts talking about the kids' schooling or, you know, this such and such topic comes up, this is my plan. I am going to say this, do this, and move on. And those can be hard to come up with, especially when this is not a skill you've worked on.
Right.
But yeah, learning to set those different kinds of boundaries in different situations is a whole skill set, takes practice, takes time, but is so, so necessary if you want to stay out of the burnout trap.
Right. That makes sense. And, you know, I know I've been really blessed that I haven't had family members who have done this, but I've had a few friends who, like, every time they see my daughter, they would like quiz her on what she was learning or like ask her math questions and just bizarre stuff they would never do for public school students. You know, it's just, and so, you know, but I can see how when, and I just kind of brushed it off because it didn't really matter to me, but it's harder when it's family, you know, when it's people that you care about, that's hard.
It is very hard. And learning to set those boundaries. One of the biggest things there that I've learned on things like that is really, really grounding yourself and really, really supporting yourself with the opinions that matter of going, I have made this decision. My husband has made this decision and I've gotten confirmation from the Lord. That is all that matters to me.
Right.
And exactly. Every time those external influences come in, don't let those expectations play with your brain. Don't sit there rerunning it. Don't set a mental boundary for yourself of going, I am not allowed to sit here and rehash what this person said over and over and over again.
Right.
I'm setting that boundary for myself. Every time that happens, I'm going to go sing a hymn or I'm going to go read a scripture, you know, whatever it is that works.
Yeah.
Make a plan of when I start thinking about these things that I've already decided don't matter, I'm going to do this instead.
Yeah. I love that. You know, coming up with a plan because we wallow sometimes,
mm-hmm.
you know, and we replay conversations about a billion times and we can't move on. So, but I love that, replace it with something else, you know, have a plan of what you're going to do. That's like genius.
Another thing that can be so helpful is maybe having that person, like for instance, like my mom is someone that I go to regularly for things like this, is having a person who maybe it's your husband for you, maybe it's even the Lord for you and scripture, but having mm-hmm. someone you can always go to for that confirmation for yourself of being like, I just had a really hard conversation, you know, someone said something or I had a hard conversation that's getting me all shaky about whether, you know, what matters to me and what's important, what I should be doing. When you're feeling shaky like that, have a person that you can go to and be like, I need you to remind me why we're homeschooling. You know,
right.
Like need you. Yeah. I just need 5 minutes of affirmation that this is the right thing. You know, help me remember, you know, like you said,
right.
remember.
Yeah, exactly.
You need to go to those reminders, you know, maybe go to a blessing that you got that talked about this. Go to your patriarchal blessing, go somewhere and remember, why am I doing this? And that's where writing something like a personal mission statement, a, you know, homeschooling mission statement, things like that can ground you and just pull you back and be like, I am so sad that this person feels this way or thinks this way or whatever, but I am going to choose what is right for me and my family. And I feel confident and reassured and grounded in the fact that this is what is right for us.
Yeah, I love that.
Just really use that as the crutch. It's not a bad thing to use those as crutches, those people, those relationships, those reminders. Use them as a crutch as much as you need to, to keep yourself grounded and not pulled out all over there trying to meet everybody's expectations at once.
I love that. And the scripture comes to mind, choose you this day. You know, so like today I'm going to choose to remember, you know what I mean? Like I'm making a choice today, you know, tomorrow may be a different day. I allow myself that space to change my mind, but for today I'm choosing. And I love it, 'cause I think that really speaks to the hopelessness.
Absolutely. And another thing to remember is that I wanted to make sure I covered here was don't get like, remember that outcome. Remember, it's not about the path. It's about the outcome, and come back to core outcomes, because sometimes we are burnt out, especially if you're already at that place and you're overcommitted and you're burnt out, blah. Ground yourself in core outcomes, going like, I had planned on doing this for math or whatever, all these fancy things I wanted to do for math, but what is the core outcome?
Right.
They need to have these facts memorized. That's it. That's all we have to do. So cut back the fluff, cut back all the extras. And yes, if it's highly motivating for you and a big, like if it fills your soul to do that extra art project because you just love doing that with your kids, go ahead, leave that in. That fills you. That's okay. But cut back all these stress, all the expectations, go back to the core goals, the core outcomes, and make a plan to get there.
Right.
That's one of the best ways. If you're already in the middle of the overwhelm and the swamped, that's one of the best ways to survive and to get through. Remind yourself of the core outcomes you're looking for with each of those projects.
Yeah, I like that. And, you know, we think we have to do all this stuff, but really if they can read and think, they can find what they need. You know what I mean? Like we're always so worried about these holes, these academic holes, which by the way, happen to public school kids all the time. You know what I mean?
Like, no, true. Again, expectations.
Yeah.
It's not reality, it's expectations just because
as long as they can read, I just, some days on bad days, I would have to remind myself, okay, we're going to read today. If nothing else today, we're going to read.
So one thing I wanted to make sure I mentioned as the last thing that I think that I really want to make sure and mention is the relational aspect of burnout, because one of, you know, we talked about the physical exhaustion, the social detachment, the sense of ineffectiveness, the emotional social detachment and the sense of ineffectiveness can both come from your perception of other people. So in other words, if you think other people are judging you or criticizing you or think you're not doing good enough, that can make you spiral and be like, I'm not doing it good enough. I'm completely ineffective. I'm completely hopeless. And then you start to shut down because, you know, you feel judged and can, you know, that creates the spiral. And so relationships can be a huge source of burnout. Mm-hmm. And that could be, you know, maybe it's your husband who you always feel is like looking over your shoulder when you're homeschooling, going like, oh, this isn't as good as, you know, whatever. Or maybe it's, again, an in-law or, you know, a close friend or a neighbor or something like that. But that can totally be a source of burnout. And the solution to that is having the hard conversations.
Right.
Because oftentimes, you know, a surprising amount of the time, there's really just miscommunication. You know, that if you just sit down and you have the conversation, you can work it out and be like, oh, I thought you were upset. Oh, no, I'm not upset about this. It's actually this other thing, you know, and you can like work all of that out. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, someone will tell you, I just don't believe in homeschooling. And you're going to have a really hard, you know, or whatever it is you're doing. And you're going to have a really hard conversation. But I say this about a number of things in life, but I think it best applies to relationships, that relationships are like that terrible closet in your house where everything just gets shoved in, right? Mm-hmm. And you don't even know what's in there. And it's all like this scary, terrible, like, oh, sort of, I don't even want to open that door.
Right.
And these hard conversations can be opening that door. And you're like, oh my gosh, I don't even want to deal with all of the fallout that could happen if I start having this conversation. But the only way to fix that closet or to fix your relationship is to open the door and make a bigger mess by pulling everything out. And yes, it's going to make a bigger mess once you pull it all out, sort it and organize it and throw some of it away and doing all of that. But sometimes it's just worth making the bigger mess for a little while.
Right.
So yes. So be willing to jump in and have those hard conversations. And maybe you need to be a little strategic about when and how you have this so that you have that space again to make a bit of a mess for a little while you reorganize things and clear things up. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does make sense. And I think a lot of times we avoid hard conversations.
For sure.
Because they're painful but you know, there's only so much that closet can hold before it explodes. And it'd sure be better to address it before the closet explodes and like gets everything in your house disaster, you know?
Oh, it's a way better metaphor than it should be.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Clearly I have experience with hard closet.
Of both kinds.
Yeah. Both literal and, you know, metaphorical, but I mean, that is good advice.
Yeah.
And sometimes good advice is hard to hear.
I find the best advice is the hardest to hear.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. We like the advice that validates what we were going to avoid anyway.
Yes. The advice that agrees with us.
Exactly.
Which tends to keep us stuck exactly where we are, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Excellent point. I like that. So any kind of final tips to wrap this up? Like you're there, you're in burnout, like, you know, you need to change your mindset. You know, you kind of are aware of what you need to do at this point, but like, how do you get that energy or get that motivation or any tips for kind of that kickoff to improvement? Yeah.
So I've been in burnout countless times. I have struggled with severe anxiety, with depression, hard places. And the one thing that I consistently find pulling me out of that is connection. Connecting with myself, connecting with Heavenly Father, connecting with my husband, with my children, and building. And that most often, that starts from the inside out. Connect with yourself first, connect with Heavenly Father, connect with those around you. It works its way out. And sometimes that connecting with yourself means doing whatever it takes to get space from the kids, have some alone space and that time, and journaling. Journaling is so powerful. It's, you know, both scientifically proven and, you know, it's that pondering that the Lord encourages us to do of just write it all down. Good, bad, ugly, worries, concerns, what ifs, all of it. Just start dumping all of this craziness in your brain onto paper and start making sense of it and cover the hard stuff, but also cover, what do you want? Mm. And that can be such a hard question to answer. And it can take time and iteration and figuring it all out. But coming back to yourself, who are you? What do you really want? And relying on that connection with yourself and with Heavenly Father to get that grounding, that foundation, and then asking for help, asking for love, asking for support, reaching out and connecting from there. That's how you come back to feeling something when you're empty, to being capable, to feeling able to handle the next day. That's how you come out of that.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And, you know, I think we were never meant to be alone. And I think that's one of the reasons the church as an organization exists, is because we need each other. And I think we forget that. We think we have to do it on our own. You know, kind of like this solo warrior kind of thing. And it's not about that at all, really. It's about the connection. So I love that idea of like connect with yourself and then kind of work out from there.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons I love this organization, the LDSHE organization, so much, is because I found so many people who totally get, you know, that, you know, it's one thing to be a homeschooler. It's another thing to be an active member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, you know, and then you smash them up together. And it's, you know,
it's a very unique position.
It is. We're a unique breed. I mean, there's just no way around it, because we're bucking society on two fronts. you know,
the often even more than that.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's true. The religious side of it, the homeschooling side of it. And so, you know, it takes a lot of support to be able to do that and do it happily.
Yeah.
Because, you know, so many, I'm sure that you have lots of people in your ward that are like, you're doing what? You know, that like, they just, I can't comprehend.
Yeah.
Can't even comprehend that. So
loneliness is one of the biggest, psychological epidemics in mm-hmm. our world today. And it is one of the fastest ways to any other kind of mental health disorder is loneliness. It's interesting to look at the studies that they have been done on that topic, because it is so real. It is so poignant, and it affects us so deeply when we feel lonely. And you can be lonely in a crowd.
Yeah.
You can be lonely in your ward. You can be lonely when you feel like you are not recognized, seen, or understood.
Right. And you know, we are so superficially connected now that we don't maybe call loneliness, or we don't recognize it as such, because, oh, I've got a million Facebook friends or whatever, but that's very superficial.
Exactly.
So, I wouldn't have necessarily thought about loneliness in connection with burnout, but I think you're absolutely right that there certainly is that element, even for introverts. You know, introverts need other people too.
Yes. No, introverts need that deep connection. If anything, they might need it more. Extroverts can survive more on the superficial interactions and be like, oh, I was kinda like, I got the buzz and it's okay. I'm an extrovert. But the introverts, they need that deep connection, that those close relationships where they can, even if they're not touching base all the time, it's
right. Yeah, sure. Exactly. Well, I love all the things we've covered. I think they're so important. Any final words?
Hang in there. Trust yourself. Trust Heavenly Father. It's like we said, it can be lonely and it's incredibly, incredibly hard. But I know that you are here on this earth right now because you have the strength inside of you to push through, to keep going, to put one foot in front of the other, and you'll make it and you'll bring your family with you.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Katie. I've learned a lot today. I have a lot of things I need to consider and maybe reevaluate in my life. So it's always good.
Well, good. I hope it makes your life better.
All right. Thank you.
Looking for even more homeschooling support? Visit our website, ldshe.org, for information on our annual conferences for adults and youth. And while you're there, check out our resource library, which contains more than 1,000 audio recordings from our past conferences, book recommendations, articles, and more. Latter-day Saint Home Educators can support your gospel-centered homeschool from the earliest stages all the way through high school and everything in between.